The folk were of another world, with its own rules and customs. And to a child who always felt ill-suited to her own world, the lure was irresistible.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are once again bringing you TikTok's most popular books and letting you know whether they're worth taking the time out of your busy schedule to read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And we are taking you this week to a magical, desolate Nordic land full of fairies, because what else are we going to read? It's all fae smut for us. So this book is called...
Hey, this book is not fae smut, to clarify. Don't stop listening right now.
Yeah.
It is not
zero smut.
Yeah, there's no smut in this book, but it is fairies, and we read a lot of books with fairies in them, if you haven't...
I'll allow that one.
Yes.
Keep listening.
You'll allow it. We do.
I just don't want to isolate our readers.
Fair enough. Okay. So the book is Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. It's more like cottagecore, cozy read more than anything else, with a twist of academia, actually. So you kind of get the marriage of a bunch of different genres that you didn't expect would meld together. And it follows Emily Wilde, who is writing an encyclopedia about the fair folk in her world. And it's kind of, she's based in Oxford, so that's a real place, but she's traveling to a region of Norway, although it's kind of not defined whether or not it's Norway, but it's Nordic countries, to study that section of the folk called the Hidden Ones and their high fae kind of grouping. And it's her last entry in her encyclopedia before she publishes it. So it's her last field trip to study these fae. And this book is set in like a journal-esque entries in her field journey. So each chapter is an entry. And that's where we kind of pick up, is her arriving in this very desolate land in the north.
And it's like, what would you say, like 1910s, maybe earlier England?
Yeah, there weren't specific, but yes, it's very like decorum. And
so there's no like modern tech, like she takes a boat here.
There's no cell phones. They have typewriters, but not computers. I would put it probably like World War I-esque.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys have your reviews?
I do. So I found a 3-star review that I thought was funny because it seems like this person wanted to give it more stars but didn't really love the ending. So this, I'm just going to read the first part of this review because it's kind of a paragraph. But Elias on Goodreads said, "So you're saying if I can get a doctorate degree in all things fairy, I can live my best like Emily."
I would love to have her lifestyle. I thought about that the entire book. I was like, I want this woman's life so bad.
Agreed.
Sounds like pretty cool to me.
Do I need to go get my PhD in anthropology now?
Fae anthropology, apparently.
Yeah. The only thing that pays less than journalism.
Well, I'm two for you in Casey-esque behavior. One I just thought was funny, a 4-star review, and it says, "The words were wording. I enjoy." But the one that made me gasp a laugh a little bit, because I had never thought about this until I read this, is a 5-star review. It says, "Never underestimate the power of an autistic bitch with a special interest in fairies."
That is so good, because the whole time I was also like, this woman has autism.
Yeah.
She's not in a
disrespectful way. Yes. Right. I do not want that misconstrued on the internet as derogatory.
As in like,
we stan.
Like a savant in her field. Kind of.
Yes. She's badass.
Hyper fixation on her work.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a lack of emotion. But
yes. Who just absolutely nerds the hell out. We relate on so many levels.
And then after reading that, I saw several more that was like, we love the neurodivergent representation. I was like, oh, I guess guess I never really thought of it, but yeah.
Even in the book, like, Emily admits that she doesn't know what to do around people. She's not good with that.
Well, and like the quote you read at the beginning, ill-suited to her own world. I don't know. I thought the review was funny. Once I let it sink in for a second, I was like,
very much so. Okay, I have brought a 2-star review. It's several paragraphs, but I'm just going to read the funny parts. What happened? This was supposed to be actually good. You lied to me, book. The ingredients were fantastic, but the dish ended up unsalted, overboiled, and generally a mush.
A mush.
This is my announcement that from now on out, when I don't like a book, I'm going to refer to it as unsalted.
Seasoned.
This is an unsalted mush. Where is the salt? Where is the flavor?
Hey, it's a good way of describing a book.
Yeah, it kind of is. Now that we're talking about spiciness.
There's no red pepper flakes either.
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
Well,
that dish was served to you by the British Empire. It is.
The white people were being white. the overall Goodreads rating is 4.1 out of 5. Overall Amazon rating 4.4 out of 5. So a well-liked book. Not everybody thought it was bland mush. What is your star rating?
Okay, I'll go first because I feel like my comments have been very similar for the last few weeks. I do want to say credit to this book. I do feel like I'm in a bit of a fantasy reading slump, and I think it's just harder for me to like really appreciate the genre right now. Throne of Glass left me on such a high that I think I've yet to really recover. So I just want to like say that first because I do feel like I'm being like maybe a little unfair to this book. I'm going to give it a 3.8, which I know is very picky, but to me it was better than a 3.5, but not good enough to be a 4. And there are things I really, really liked in it. I loved Emily. I thought the characters were all interesting. I loved the setup of the story being like of an academic exploring something that's more unknown. However, I also thought it was at times a crutch to get away with shoddy world building. I just would have liked it a lot more if we spent a lot more time with the Fae and like understanding them. I felt like the first half of the book was not really about anything. So I ended up liking the second half of the book a lot more. And there's one specific scene that won me over that I want to talk about later.
Ooh, I actually don't hate you for your 3.8 because I gave this a 4. I really did love it. It fits my love for kind of period England, like Jane Austen-esque detailed writing, and also with a splash of like fantasy and dark academia. Like, what more do you want? Also, fairies, which apparently is just like my niche these days.
Yeah.
So I really did love it. I did feel like the pacing was kind of like it went from 0 to 100 and back. Mm-hmm. And was not super well paced. And I also feel like the end was, I was like, flip, 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 flip. Oh, shit, it's over. Like,
yeah,
the action at the end, while intriguing, just felt not fleshed out enough for me. I need a little bit more. So I lost points for that. But otherwise, I love Emily. I love the other characters. I love the setting, the Nordic little island that she's on. I love Poe, so really overall fits my type of reader perfectly. I'm excited for book 2.
So I actually gave it the highest rating. I gave it 4.5 stars. I really loved Emily so much that that's probably why it's so high rated. Her just being herself and like showing neurodivergent people and like having that representation in a main character is just so cool to me. And then I also liked the love interest a lot. And I love the townspeople because they had unique stories about their experiences with Faye. And because of their customs, there's this like awkward communication between them and Emily because she doesn't understand how to broach those kind of subjects. And they're so used to a different kind of greeting or custom. And so it makes for an interesting like narrative between the two groups and how to rebuild that by learning about each other, which I thought was really interesting. I docked it points because of the beginning being so slow. There were points where I was like, oh, this is kind of dragging on. It's really just building up a lot of random stuff. And I get it. It's supposed to be like a field guide. So like field reporting on just sitting around on a rock can be a little boring. But once it picked up towards the like one third mark to the halfway mark, it hooked me and I finished it very quickly after that.
When I pitched this one to them, I think I said something like, it has everything we normally love to read, but in a way that we never read it. Like,
yes,
I do. It's got all the pieces. It's kind of refreshing on the fantasy scene.
Minus a sexy dark man.
Yes.
Everything else is there.
Yes. I was waiting for one to pop up. And I was honestly, I got to the end and was like, okay, I'm okay with the fact that something different has happened here.
Me too.
And also, like, it reads like historical fiction, not like fantasy, like the tone. So, like, I don't know. It has all the elements that we normally love and just mixes them up totally different. So, props to Heather Fawcett for putting something unique into an oversaturated fantasy genre.
Yeah, I love historical fiction, so that makes perfect sense why I love this book. So maybe that's why I gave it 4.5 stars.
It does. And I will say I agree with you. It's very unique, and I did think that it was very well written.
Actually, I was going to save this for later, but it's not a review I wanted to read as part of our review section, but one I screenshotted anyway because a portion of it I liked. So I'll just read that. It says, completely unrelated, I'm just fascinated by the marketing for this book. It's tame like a YA novel, but the characters are 30 years old and it's technically marked as an adult novel. It's like it was specifically written for us, for the extremely large group of adults who read YA fantasy novels. It's kind of accepted in publishing that there's this weird gap where the fantasy novels are marketed towards teens but are read by adults. So I'm fascinated by the fact that this was not the case for this book, especially since the cover and title scream YA. So interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was so insightful. And I was like, you know what? You're so right.
That is extremely insightful because they're totally right. Everyone in this book is a grown up, but it has
not like a 20-year-old, like a 30-year-old.
Yeah. But it does have like a lot of YA characteristics. Particularly complete lack of sexual activity.
I mean, there is, but it's off to the side and it's not with the main character.
I mean, even YA books are hitting it kind of hard these days. Like, the smut is in.
But, like, there is a large audience of readers who want to read fantasy without the smut. Is that us? No. But this, I could see it being like a gateway book into fantasy, and I could see it being as like a placeholder for those people looking for the YA fantasies, but more adult.
I would totally recommend this book to someone who's like, okay, I'm intimidated by SJM. I'm not really sure if I want to stick my foot in all that. I'd be like, oh my God, have you heard of Emily Wilde?
Especially if that person previously likes classic novels and historical fiction, I'd be like, this is your start into fantasy so you can understand like the fairy lore. And then I'll recommend some after that if you like it.
Right. If you're like a Jane Austen girly and want to dip your toe into fantasy, this is the move.
Yeah. Jane Austen meets Faye.
Honestly, I'd love to see Lizzie appear in this book. Anyway.
Yes.
Yes.
Would you say it's more plot or character driven?
I would say probably plot. Despite it being about a character's field journal, there's a lot going on to her and a lot going on around her that she's kind of like thrust into the situation and puts herself in situations. But she has autonomy and also has like almost like a third person narrator because she's a researcher. So she's trying not to get involved, but is failing miserably at that. So I'd probably say plot, but it could be close.
I think I lean character just because her like offbeat personality, like atypical kind of social interaction, gets her into a lot of the problems that she is in the book. And she's just so driven to accomplish her goal that she's just swatting these problems aside, like trying to like, she never strays from her one goal. I don't know. Like, I see the plot argument, but also I just think without Emily's specific personality, this book is not this book.
I see what you're saying. I think I'm also going to vote plot just because, I mean, Emily makes some grossly miscalculated decisions in this novel. But most of it is sort of out of her control. Like, and so this is not a princess saves the prince narrative, which I actually really enjoyed the point of it and the way it came together in the end in that respect. But, you know, if you are not the person doing the saving, you have a lot more sitting around time. So there is a lot of her character, but I do think it's ultimately plot.
Have you read other books by the author / will you be reading book 2 that just came out in January?
I have not read other books by the author, but yes, I will be reading the second book once my library hold comes to me.
So this author actually has quite a few other books, according to Google. I have not read any of them. It looks like she kind of dabbles in fiction for children.
That explains some of the whimsy in this book.
It does. Her whimsy, she nailed it. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like quite a few of her other books have been children's books. But yeah, I would try the sequel to Emily Wilde, I think. I'm definitely not going to read an actual children's book, but...
I've not read her other books. However, Emily Wilde's Map of the Otherlands is sitting next to me as we speak. I put in my hold at the library before they had even bought the copy, so I think I'm the first person with my hands on it, which is such a joy. A library book untouched? What?
Snaps.
So once I finish Crescent City, we'll probably go right for it. But that'll be a while.
That, speaking of, there are so many books, continuations of series that have come out in January.
It's killing me, man.
It's a lot.
There's so much to read, so little time.
I know.
Yes. Okay, something we've touched on a little bit. How was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I blew through this one. I read it over the holidays, end of the year. So I just sat there and read it pretty much straight. I think it was 2 or 3 days. Yes, it was slow at the beginning, but I also don't mind some of that. Like I said, I like Jane Austen, and Jane Austen is one for details. So it didn't bother me, and I just blew through it. I can understand how the pacing might not be the same for other people.
That surprises me because you're normally someone who says, I need more action.
I liked Emily enough that it didn't matter.
Caitlin loves a cozy fantasy.
I love a curmudgeonly female main character.
Fair enough.
A I girl relate. Who stays at home. That is what we like.
Love me a curmudgeon.
never mind. I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, I said.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Remind me of myself. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you recognize that.
I relate. That's what I said.
Mm-hmm. So for me, the pacing of the book, the first half, I do dock points for that. I think there could have been a little more sugar and spice in the first half of the book. That being said, I did enjoy getting to know the characters. I mostly read the book in two devoted chunks, but I think it ultimately took me 3 or 4 days to read it. But like I sat down and I read like almost half of it one day, and then I sat down another day and like almost finished it. So I don't think the fact that the pacing is slow takes much away from the experience, if that makes sense.
I also read it in chunks. So according to Goodreads, it took me 5 days. But what I distinctly remember is the first half took me longer than the second half. I read the second half in one sitting. So I just breezed through that last half. But getting into it took me a minute where I was like, I was getting a little more pickier about my books I was reading. And I wasn't going to DNF it. It wasn't bad. It was just slow. So the pacing is not great getting into it, which sometimes can like make readers stop, which is really unfortunate. But I think it pays off at the end with the pacing.
Yes. So would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I don't know. I guess I could see this being Downton Abbey-esque. I don't know, like Bridgerton-esque, but not, you know, like people like are into this Bridgerton sort of thing right now, like kind of old England. This is maybe not as old as that, but actually, no, this, I don't, it might be too boring. I don't know if you could like replicate it.
That's what I was thinking.
Boring. I actually think, so I think once the whole series is out, I'm not sure how many books she's planning on writing right now.
I think it's obviously a trilogy.
Okay. I think once the whole trilogy is out, I could see an argument for a movie. As this one book stands, I'm not sure there's enough action right at this moment. However, I saw a few reviews talking about Studio Ghibli. And yes,
I saw so many comparing this to Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes. And I would not mind like a funky, quirky animation.
It's very cottagecore, very much, I don't know, there's so much quippy, like sarcastic commentary that it's not all around like boring, but you're right. It's like hard to reproduce for like, it would be better as a cartoon if someone did approach it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with y'all. It might be too boring for a movie. It's definitely not enough for a TV show.
No.
But I could get behind an animated movie, but I don't know if I would see it even if it was an animated movie. It would have to have really good reviews, because knowing the book, this might be too boring for the silver screen.
The male character would have to be really hot.
So that's actually what I was about to say, is the only thing that keeps me interested in seeing a movie adaptation is Bumblebee. Because I just think that he would be a really cute and fun character to see brought to life. Especially to see him and Emily's contrast. But, you know, like always, there's a danger that the production company just totally fucks it up. So.
All right. Yeah. Well. Are you ready to get into the spoilers?
Busy girl rating.
Oh, shit. I love it when I'm not the one who has
to. I'm even looking. I'm literally like looking at it saying busy girl rating.
It's in bold. Or in,
it's not
all
in
caps.
Bold, but
all caps.
I'm looking at it and was just like scrolling by.
I think we've all done that at least once at this point.
I'm sorry. I've done it.
Caitlin's like,
I'm about to go back and listen to every episode. No.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's 73 episodes. Good fucking luck.
Yeah. That's,
I don't like hearing our voices that much. So,
no.
Okay. Catherine, what is your busy girl rating?
Okay. I'm going to probably give it a 3, honestly. It's short, but it took a minute. And it takes a minute to get into. And like, if you're a busy girl, you need like instant gratification or instant hook to get into a book. So unfortunately, I'm going to dock it to a 3.
I personally disagree. I'm going to give it a 4 because it is so short. If you can't finish it, you are not an adult.
Caitlin.
I mean, like, come on. How much time are you really wasting on that slow part? Like, it's not that hard.
So, anyway,
I know it's not for everybody, but I think this is more generally, like, general fantasy for anybody could pick it up. It's more accessible than a lot of fantasy books. And I just think it's more widely appealing despite the slow beginning. And also, it's 300 pages. Like, come on.
So I'm actually going to agree with Caitlin. I'm going to give it 4.
Casey never agrees with me, guys.
I know. Truly once in a lifetime. On that's such a gross exaggeration, actually.
This is my one time, guys.
The thing that bumps it from a 3 to a 4 for me is the fantasy accessibility. I think I would actually recommend this book to a wider variety of people than I've recommended books that I actually liked more than it. Because I think it has an appeal that, like, just a lot of people would respond to. Like, I think my mom would really like this book, The Smut Queen, if you haven't listened to our other episodes. And I can just see a lot of people enjoying it that I wouldn't normally recommend the same type of book.
I see y'all's point. I mean, I guess I just put it on the same level as, like, a Jane Austen book, where if you like Jane Austen, you're going to like it and it's going to be an easy read. But if you don't, it's going to be a lot harder to pick up and put down on a busy schedule. And that's what I equated to. And I think I gave all the Jane Austen books a 3. So it's more of where I'm putting it in line.
I do see that argument as well.
I do. But also, like, if I was going to tell someone, if they said, I'm getting snowed in, what book should I curl up with by the window and watch the snow fall? This would be the first book I recommend for the rest of my life.
You know why I know this book isn't a 5-star for me is that the first book that popped to my mind is still 6 Crimson Cranes.
It's just the Nordic setting, literal cottage core, like they're in a cottage.
I will say if you're in a place that snows, the snow vibes do hit. The winter vibes are there.
Okay. Now, since I've politely asked you all for your busy girl ratings, would you like to get to the spoiler alert section?
Of course.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm going to totally just start by derailing our conversation because I just...
Here we are. Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club.
There's a scene I really want to talk about because I loved it so much, and I just finished this book, like, literally, like, once again, this is always the case, but I just finished like 10 minutes ago. The scene in this book that, like, won me over was the scene where she calls back the magic word that retrieves buttons, and that's how she frees the king. I thought it was so random but ingenious. It, like, called back to the perfectly laid moment earlier in the book that was, like, perfectly subtle. You never really think anything of it, and then all of a sudden it just, like, reappears at the perfect moment. Like, I just thought it was so well done, and I loved that scene so much. It was so whimsical and just perfectly timed.
That was, like, not at all what I thought you were going to say, but I love it.
I really wasn't sure
where you're going, but I didn't think that. And you're right, though. Like, whimsical is the word for this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right. It was a perfectly laid foreshadowing that you didn't even realize was foreshadowing. Right.
There are often Easter eggs that, like, they beat you over the head with. And you're like, well, that's coming back. This was not one of them.
And yeah, it was just a one-off, like, observation that she's putting in her field guide, and then you're like, oh, she actually uses it.
And then the scene itself is so funny because she's literally just dripping blood from her sawed off finger.
Okay, that was disgusting.
That also was gross.
Yes. I was like, okay, this is really
we went from do-do-do-do-do to I'm cutting off my finger.
Yes. I was like, okay, I think I'm pretty dedicated to my job, and I would not even get close to cutting off a finger. But so it's like the contrast of the ridiculousness and the seriousness that exist at the same time is so good, because she's literally releasing like a long captive fairy king, and she's sitting there dripping blood in front of a tree, just like calling out a word that retrieves buttons. It's just so perfect.
See, I feel like if we're on it, the moment that won my heart, which normally I would hate the abrupt perspective shift. I also normally hate like diary-esque stories, but this one I did not mind. It fit. It's when Bumblebee writes her entries for her while she's like unconscious. I'm like, that is true love. Okay. That was so cute. My heart would have been like, first I would have been like, why'd you touch my journal? But then I would have been like, you know me.
Well, because even she says, she's just like, oh my God, he went through my stuff. Like, oh my God. Like, it was so cute. The little back and forth. Oh my God. So no, cute. I love that moment where he writes a journal entry. Because it's not even.
He's like, I know you'll hate this, but I have to do this because you'll want the like continuation of the story.
And it's not even a true perspective change, because it was always in this narrative, like third person right. kind of thing. So it was
they were always just academic entries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he just was like, I'm continuing it for you. And I was like, oh, that's so cute.
I don't like have a favorite moment. I mean, like, that's one of them for sure. But like, I just loved the dog. Like, I was obsessed with her fey familiar dog.
Air quotes, dog.
Yeah, no. I knew from the get-go that dog
was
not a dog.
Me too. I was like, that's not a normal dog. But then I didn't expect what actually it was. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. I love that dog, though.
Well, Casey, you did derail our conversation. So circling back to question one Catherine has here for us. In general, what do you think about the setup being Emily Wilde heading off to this remote Nordic unstudied region to complete her encyclopedia so she can kick all the guys' asses in academia?
I love an academic queen. I do. Like, the only thing I enjoy about Allie Hazelwood's books are the academic background. So,
just twist the knife, Casey. Just twist it. Allie Hazelwood, I love you.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, she has mega fans on this podcast who are not me. But the academic setting is one way to just get one easy star from me, because I just love academics and I think I relate to them. Like, being in news is definitely a form of being an academic. So I really liked her, and I really liked the setup of like, she's this sort of misunderstood nerd. And I just felt like such a lot of affection to her. And I thought the Nordic region was also a really good choice, because it just felt like it fit the fairy tale vibe really well.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the start of Emily, like, explaining, like, this is a journal. I'm going to keep a record of all of my events. But I also agree with Caitlin. I normally don't like diary entries or journal entries as a book format.
Me either. Yeah.
Because I feel like it's lazy. In this case, it is not lazy. It's actually a very good plot tool and a very good tool to tell the story. Otherwise, I don't think it would be as fun and whimsical if it was just like truly her inside her head telling the story. This gives it that academic whimsical vibe. So I think this is the one exception where I actually enjoyed it. But there were moments where I was like, oh, God, the fucking journal entries. Like, I wish I could just like not be in journal entry mode.
I often like, In some of the longer like chapters, entries, like I forgot I was in a journal entry at various points, because it really did suck you in. It would only work with this exact character in this exact scenario. Like, it's really clever by the author. One of my favorite things about this is fairies and the fae folk are not a secret to the world. Like, they are studying this, so there's none of the stupid secrecy stuff, like, well, I can't tell them I met a fairy or whatever. Like, they leave offerings to the fae folk, like Nordic countries often do, and like, they're just an accepted lore in the society and there's people studying it. And I just think that is so fun, such a fun change of pace, other than a hidden world.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I will say the mythology of this book was really, really fun to dive into, especially like you said, where like the world knows about the Fae. So it's an entire research division at Oxford with many academics and doctorates. So I thought that was really cool. I love that Emily is there's not a complete encyclopedia of all the Fae. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spend most of my young adult life traveling the world and gathering journal entries so I can be the first to make this complete guide. And I was like, I love that for you. You're living my choice of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, while we're on the academia theme of the book, the footnotes, what did you think?
I loved them when they were funny. There were a few that I was like, okay, girl, skip. But the ones that were funny, I really liked.
I skimmed some.
I agree. The funny ones were really funny. And the other ones were kind of I have to stop and read this. But also, the amount of thought the author has put into the lore of the Fae folk in this world and referencing these other texts she's seemingly basically written in her mind whole other books to reference is impressive. So props to her, despite sometimes them being a little jarring. But when they were funny, they were really freaking funny.
Yes. Though I feel like we might as well segue on this point, because one of my main qualms with the book was that it didn't include more description of Fae history and the history of Fae interacting with humans. And I wish there were more stories included that gave us a little more context.
Well, maybe you shouldn't skim the footnotes.
Okay. Catherine skimmed the footnotes. I read them all. Some of them I just didn't like.
I will say, to piggyback off of that, because this is a snapshot of the encyclopedia, it's definitely very present day, this specific instance and this specific case study. So
it references other.
It does reference things. Others, but it goes in depth with townspeople's stories about how they interact with the Fae. And I really enjoyed those because I was my God, this is going into the mythology. And I've been to Iceland, which is kind of a semi-Nordic country, because it was...
I thought of you the whole time I was reading this, because Icelandic people literally leave offerings for Fae folk.
Yes. And there's a whole Christmas tradition with these trolls that come down from the mountain and steal things from your farms and drink your cow's milk from the tit. It's a very weird situation. One of their names is pot liquor
from the tit.
Yeah, no, it
sounds like my kind of people. I love a quirky lore.
I know there's pot liquor where he licks your pots if you leave them with residue on them. And I think
I've actually heard of this. I know you're not lying.
Yeah, I think there was one that was called tit sucker, but I'm not positive.
But these are also the people that bring you Jalabakasflan.
Yes.
So
it's very whimsical, and it very much felt like Iceland when I was reading it. So I got this very cozy vibe of oh, I remember that. That was cool. So I think it does a good job of giving that present day snapshot of this specific people. But I agree with you, Casey. I wish we had delved into the in general Fae of the whole world.
But there's two more books. World building.
So hurrah. And we've got a marriage proposal to think about.
Oh my God. Talk about someone, a review I read was like, why do we need another book? I thought this one wrapped up perfectly. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? I need to know the answer.
She didn't say anything.
I was like, how is that a perfectly wrapped up? I don't need that.
So I actually did think the book totally could have been a standalone. I'm not mad that it's a series, but I feel like the author left it very much could continue, but could leave it here.
Could be a 10 book series at this point.
Honestly, yeah.
It could just be, I don't think it will be, but yeah, there's room for either direction.
Could be Magic Treehouse for adults.
Oh my gosh.
Sign me up.
That was just like a flashback.
The hit of like nostalgic serotonin I just got when you said that.
Yeah, that rushed to my head.
That's like that drugs, so... guys.
Yeah.
Magic Treehouse, the drugs for kids.
The drugs for kids.
Oh man.
Anyway. On that note. Like the book banners of the world need us out there referring to books about magic as drugs for kids.
I mean, I was riding some highs in school, man. Some good highs back then.
I'm cutting this off. We're done.
I do feel like, though, as adults, we're often looking for those books that kind of scratch that itch of those cute, quirky, little, short books that just with a little sprinkle of magic, you know?
Yeah.
You are right.
We want inventiveness and novelty.
Yeah, this fits.
It does.
With a whole lot of academia included.
Okay. So, what did you think of Emily's first interactions with the townspeople, as well as her first interactions with the folk? Like, we've already kind of discussed the fact that, like, Emily is a neurodivergent character. What did you guys think just about all of those interactions?
I know what people thought at the beginning of the book was kind of slow, but like once she started interacting with the townspeople, I was so hooked because the interactions, I was like, yep. I understand how her like social anxiety stepped her into each and every one of those situations. We've all been there to some extent, just like not knowing the lay of the land in the social setting. And I thought, you know, and how she approached the town leader versus the couple with the changeling and the old lady cracked me up. I loved the old lady.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really loved the townspeople and how Emily just couldn't figure out how to navigate them until Bumblebee showed up. And I thought it was so funny.
Cough, cough, found family.
Yes.
And
cough, cough, found home.
Yes, found home.
When she left at the end, I was like, bitch, I thought you were staying forever.
So the only, literally, I know I'm such a Texan because in my head, I was like, I want her to stay so bad, but I also understand why the cold is simply untenable. Like, she...
I agree. Agreed.
Most Texans aren't, never mind, I was going to make a Texas joke. I was going to say most Texans aren't literate enough to use the word untenable, but.
Fuck you. Okay, Missouri.
Yeah, I didn't claim anything about myself.
But yes, I totally agree that, yeah.
Well, she was so driven to achieve and speak at this conference that like, I knew she would leave. I just didn't want her to.
Yeah, I really liked, like, so the reason why I thought it was slow at the beginning is because we all knew what she was doing was going to impact her relationship with the townspeople and stuff like that. But she didn't know that. So it really started picking up for me once Bumblebee was in the situation. Like, that's when he was just like, sweetheart, didn't you read up about the culture of this place? Like, you're supposed to accept gifts and accept help, and that's how they form attachments to you. And so when she said, no, I'm an independent queen who doesn't need anything, that offended them. And I didn't know that reading the book because obviously she didn't read up on the culture, so she doesn't know that. And so when he said that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I knew she was prickly, but I didn't realize she like directly like offended them.
Well, I think to an extent, her being there alone and just making all of these social mistakes develops Bumblebee's character before he's even on the scene, because it sets her up this way so that when he comes, you're like, oh, thank God someone saved her. Yeah. And it gives you a look at like what kind of person he is and how they contrast each other.
Yes. And I love the message, you need other people. I feel like, you know, we're all overachievers. it's really hard to accept that sometimes in your actual life. And so I feel like I always love stories about like strong, smart female main characters learning that it's okay to count on other people and that that's normal and healthy. And like you actually, as a human being, really need people to count on. And so like, that's something I also really loved about Fourth Wing, is that it shows characters with disabilities or differences who the fact that you need help in certain ways does not mean you're not like an smart, strong, empowered person. We all need other people regardless of what we face in our lives. And so that message is just always hits with me.
Thank you, Pastor Casey. That was so insightful.
Yeah.
I feel like motivated. Also, you were saying that and my head went, oh, it's like Frozen. She's like Elsa. So there's two types of people in the world.
Yeah. Okay, though, that scene where they find the Elf King's snow palace, I was literally envisioning Elsa. Like I was
100%.
Yeah, I was like, where's the abominable marshmallow snowman?
Yes.
Yeah, I love the opposite. It's attract, like, extroverted, very people person Bumblebee, introverted, not people person Emily, and them finding common ground but also finding love.
So the romance actually is something I'm still have not decided on.
I'm also indecisive on the romance.
I just really didn't feel it for most of the book.
Because it was not there, not there, not there. And then he wanted to marry her. And I was like, what?
Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And on one hand, I understand it because Emily, you know, misses things in social interactions. But I felt like her interest in him was a little underdeveloped.
Agreed.
And there were some scenes that won me over a little bit. Like, he worked so hard to rescue her, and
she rescued him that one time with, like, the little drink of tea or whatever.
Yes, she does rescue him. He clearly, like, adores her for who she is. But, like, for a lot of the book, I wasn't sure if I really would have been happier with friendship vibes.
Yes.
I felt like the romance was maybe a little bit forced.
So, I actually didn't think it was forced, actually, because if you think about it, this is a field guide, so she wouldn't be talking about her personal relationships in a field guide. Like, it's a journal, but her main intention of the journal is to take note of her research. So I kind of felt like I was reading between the lines, where she was kind of mentioning keeping her feelings down a bit, or where she was like, I feel like I need him. I'm glad he's here, despite the fact that I didn't want him here. And then I just really loved his heritage as like an Irish fae. And she knew all along, but was like willing to let him play off as like he's human. Until eventually she's like, yeah, I know you're fae. And you know I know you're fae. And it's time to save your goddamn life. Like, I liked those kind of moments, and I felt like it was a good slow burn romance. And I'm curious to see what happens next. Cause think about it. If it's truly like 19th century romance or early 20th century romance, they would get engaged pretty quickly after starting to court. So
I don't agree that it's forced. I also don't agree though that it's slow burn. I think you see the like nuggets. She's like, he's my only friend. But then she's like, but this stupid man forces me to eat breakfast with him and be social. Like, I got a very much like, she just didn't know how he fit into her life.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like with how not necessarily reciprocal she was, the marriage thing was very sudden. I would have loved them to like him to be like, let me, but you're right, like time period wise, I guess they would basically just go from 0 to 100 like that. But I don't know. I just think we all love Bumblebee because we're all very independent, fairly studious women who would love a guy to just follow us around and worship us like that.
Yeah, I'm like, please.
Where is my top blonde?
Oh my god,
man!
A man who cleans the house unprompted, dream man,
and likes to.
Yes, yeah. I was like, Who fixes is
all
this?
Your clothes?
I makes your like... clothes like magical and amazing.
The fantasy element is not the fae. It's the
yeah,
it's the man who brownie. Will keep the house for you.
Oh yeah, no, I loved the scene where he goes to save her from the palace and he pretends to be like, he turns into like the his brownie self and pretends to be a tailor. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
So strange.
Yeah. Okay. So Emily ends up on quite a journey. The first half of it is very emotional because she becomes emotionally invested in this town when she's not used to that. She's used to being very arm's distance from people. What did you think about her helping get rid of the changeling and her also releasing the king from the tree, which we've already discussed is my favorite scene?
I knew she was going to get sucked into the changeling thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was still pretty badass how she did it.
Mm-hmm.
The king in the tree thing, I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. And she's like, for academics. And like, I was like, oh, no, honey. Like, you knew what was coming. And it was just like a, you know, watching the train crash come. But
yes.
Still, the way she went about it every time was just like, I have researched this and I know what I'm doing. And here's what I'm doing. And I liked that it was no just like, oh, maybe I'll try this thing or something mm-hmm. accidentally happened. Like, I feel like we get that a lot from these kind of like fae fantasy books. Like, they accidentally end up being the heroes. And she's like, no, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, she's very well thought out about it. She's very scientific method, like very like hypothesis, try it out, hypothesis again, try it out. It's very scientific in her moves, but like, because she's so calculated about it, she forgets the emotional human side of things that like mm-hmm. things go wrong when you factor in living beings and other people into the situation. So like, I knew as soon as she let go of the king, like, oh, he's going to take you prisoner or something's going to happen here. He is not your friend. He was put in a tree for a goddamn reason. And then he was like, well, we have a prophecy that we get married despite the fact that you're ugly to me. I was like, Jesus Christ.
He's like, it's fine. You'll die soon anyway.
Yeah. Yes.
I was like, well, that does fit with every fae story ever.
It does. And so I actually did want to say that I really appreciated the moral grayness of the fae. Like, those were people to me that really, truly were morally gray. Because they weren't really bad, but they also weren't really good. And, like, they made a lot of very self-centered, chaotic choices. But it's like, well, they have a different perspective. They're fae. They're not human. They're immortal. And so I felt like everything they did was really well explained, but I appreciated very much that they were just sort of chaos agents in the story.
The best fae character, the little folk, Poe.
Mm-hmm.
I love Poe.
Our man
is my whole heart, and I want his bread so bad.
When he said that little word for like a human that you trust, that you, you know, will make a fair deal with you, I was like...
And when his house, when his tree was burned, I was like, no, don't kill Poe.
Yeah, I thought anyway, he was dead. I was going to be so upset.
I quite enjoyed. Also, like, actually talking about the difference between, like, the big folk or, like, the big ones are, like, predators, basically, at the top of the food chain. And then you have little sweet Poe who's, like, just scraping by and trusting and, like, it was cool how she set up the differences in the different kinds of fae mm-hmm. through that little relationship with Poe. Like, he's still conniving and like trying to get his, like, you
get
know,
his bag. Yeah.
Get his, make his bargain, but he's the bottom of the food chain.
Because they're a transactional species where they very much bargain and deal for everything they get and do.
Right.
And I thought it was very interesting, like you said, Casey, about the morally gray. It's not even, I mean, it is morally gray, but it's just who they are. It's the species mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. And if you lived that long and that immortal, humanity and souls and like life kind of loses a lot of meaning because you just, you see life die every 100 years and you're living thousands. So it's very easy to become darker because of that.
Well, and even Bumblebee has kind of magicked his way into the upper echelons of society while he sits tight. Mm-hmm. So like even he is making these kind of like, well, that's not fair.
Yeah. But
also, he's Bumblebee, and I'd be like, I'd let you be my professor too.
Yes, it's very much a dynamic I appreciate in Greek mythology retellings, actually, where there's like a big like graduation of power. And so things aren't always simple. And I love books that explore how immortality would change your morality. Because obviously I don't think it's fair to like not value living creatures, but like, yeah, I think if I lived forever, I would view human life a little differently. So I appreciate books that thoroughly explore that.
Okay, back to the girl, don't let that man out of the tree.
Don't we all say that once a month?
She did not question their morality whatsoever. She said, time to study. What did you think about the whole her getting captured, put in the palace, and the king himself and his court? And then also the little plan hatched by the little townsfolk and Wendell to go... you mentioned, changes into his brownie form, which is funny because you kind of expect him to just come in full fey, like, alpha hole mode, and rescue her, but as the opposite of what he does. What did you think of that whole, kind of the climax of the book, I guess?
I loved that, because they had been setting up this whole thing about how the king got in the tree and the stories behind that and the myths behind that, because it had been centuries, and how it was his wife that did it, and it's now queen, and there have been consequences and bad things have happened because she's in the court, and that's why the changelings are more happening more and more, and people are losing their minds in the forest. And she doesn't really think about what happened during his reign that could be unintended consequences for the humans. And she finds out that it causes like a very drastic winter that is basically flooding the town with snow and with like ice and everything like that and blocking trade. So I thought that was really interesting to see the unintended consequences of like, there's no good ruler. There's just two different rulers that have very different ways of ruling, and either way there's going to be unintended consequences. But I thought it was funny how she didn't lose her cool when she was in prison, but at the same time she kept her same self of like, I have to analyze everything, I've been here for a month now, I just try to manipulate him into letting me go, but it's not working very well. It's very funny.
Yeah, like she's out of her depth because no one's ever been where she's at with the awareness she has. Mm-hmm. And she has to admit, like, I don't know everything and I need some help. Back to the whole thing about everybody needs a little help. Mm-hmm. I also just love that the townspeople ended up loving her despite her you know, bumpy edges, and came to her rescue with Wendell because they loved Wendell despite his being fey. Like, I just thought it was so cute.
I did. I loved their little plot. I loved how everyone came together. On the king, I want to ask, have you guys ever seen What We Do in the Shadows?
No.
So it's originally a movie, but it's now a TV series. And it's a comedy, and it's about vampires in the modern day. But sort of like if vampires were real people and not like these epic, like badass, hardened characters. And that's kind of how I felt about the king, where like we've read a lot of other books with Fae where they're these like hardened, badass warriors, and they're so serious and they accomplish business, and they have all these personas that they use to get power. And then the king in this court was a tyrant, but he was like a regular dude. He was just like fucking around, you know? And the marriage to her wasn't even that serious to him, because he's like, well, you're going to die, and what to me is a blink of an eye, so I don't really care about this. This is just something I do for like propriety's sake. And so I just thought it was a really funny take on Fae.
Yeah, it was unique in a lot of ways, but also, like, I feel like it did fit more with the stories you hear as folk tales, not as a lot of what's been in fantasy. And it was interesting. He did give major, like, Colin vibes, like human but not, like trying to blend in, but also is like deadly predator. Also, he's like, yeah, it's snowing a lot, we're celebrating. Like, he did not think, he's like, yeah, it's a party, there's a lot of snow, what's up?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with this,
gotta have snow at a party, come on.
Right.
Yeah, I love that she becomes part of the folk tales.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, she's in the narrative now.
I do too. It's so cute.
She's like, I am the expert because I was the bride of a hidden folk king in whatever town that was.
Had not one, but two fey men trying to get her. Like,
honestly, every girl's dream.
Slay.
Because anyway, yes, I did love Wendell showing up as this like weird little brownie fey. Because along the sort of things we've talked about, it like really like reverses that hero narrative of like, oh, you come in guns blazing and you're all sexy, like for some reason your shirt's gone and there's oil and then and then you just get this like very wholesome man just like working so hard to save you with like everything else that he has at his disposal.
Well, that was one of those other little Easter eggs that she lays is like, mm-hmm, he just keeps mending her things because he can't not mend things. So then he appears as a tailor and you're like, oh.
Okay, I love this last question. I just read it. Although this book describes Emily as plain mortal woman, disgusting, do you have
was that the king talking? Was that the king talking?
Do you have suspicions that she has some magic in her? What are you expecting in the next book? Short answer, I'm absolutely expecting that this woman is magic in some way, shape, or form. Do I think she's fey? Not necessarily, but I think she has some sort of access to magic that other people don't have.
It does always talk about how she seems to understand the fey folk just so innately where other people don't, which I feel like you chalk it up to just her studiousness, but also she does just seem to know.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Like, I don't know if she's fey, but also I feel like for her to, we assume, marry Bumblebee at some point, there probably is a requirement that she has something spectacular about her,
yeah,
for it to be like societally acceptable to the fae.
Well, because he's an Irish prince, exiled, but an Irish prince.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish I was better at imagining the Irish brogue accent while reading.
Oh, I could. Yeah. It was great. But yeah, no, the reason why I like wrote this question down is because I have so many suspicions. Like, she is not just a mortal woman. Like, mm-hmm, I agree with y'all. I don't think she's fae. But I think she has some kind of magic in her, because even Bumblebee says, like, I thought you were fey the first time I met you because you were such a keen observer of the mm-hmm world around you. And you could see the fey when others couldn't. And I thought that was a very big hint of a future book and potentially looking into her past a bit more, because that wasn't also really delved into mm-hmm much. We know her parents are alive and she doesn't really have like much of a relationship with them. But I'm very curious to see where that goes. That was like one of the only other things that didn't tie up in a nice bow in this book. It was Bumblebee proposing and her not giving an answer, and her lineage and her kind of magic ability, question mark.
I'll leave you with a thought. Maybe the whole purpose of that, like getting you to think that, is the point is that sometimes just your neurodivergence is a little bit magical.
Aww.
Also beautiful.
I love that.
Slay. Okay. Well, I think that's all our discussion. Do you guys have recommendations? I want to reiterate the television recommendation for What We Do in the Shadows. It is not PG in any sense, but it is funny. And it is like, it's kind of cozy. It's like The Office, if The Office was a cozy fantasy.
I have a recommendation. It's a podcast book, actually. Tress of the Emerald Sea, I think has very similar vibes to Emily Wilde, and like the strong female main character that is leading the story, and that she is very smart and thinks her moves in advance before she does them, instead of like hero barging in to save the day with no thought in their head, which is a lot of male main characters. But, you know, thankfully we've got female main characters that stop that bullshit. But yeah, so Tress of the Emerald Sea is a young adult book that is more sci-fi fantasy. So it's based in like another solar system or universe world system where there are deadly spores that live in the water that can grow weeds, can grow diamond ruby things that can kill your ships. And there's a lot of things that ensue because she's trying to save her love.
Every time I hear someone explain Tress, or I try to explain Tress without like having out of context, you know, I'm like, mm-hmm. What drugs are these? Is this book on?
Yes.
But cozy fantasy, yes. I'm going to recommend one that I got an advanced copy of and read, and it is called The Confessions of Lydia Bennett Witch. And it is basically taking Pride and Prejudice from, and even like post Pride and Prejudice, Lydia's point of view. Lydia runs off with Mr. Wickham, and it kind of tells this tale of how she ends up in that situation, not because she's like a dumb ditzy blonde, but because she's a witch and gets tied up in these shenanigans and gets stuck with Mr. Wickham. And it's like Jane Austen, but with a little sprinkle of magic. And it's also kind of whimsical because it's the other point of view. And like her sister Kitty is actually her familiar and a cat, but like the people see her as Kitty the girl. And like very whimsical also, with a little sprinkle of magic.
Very cute.
Like similarly though, not for everybody. You gotta kind of like the Jane Austen vibe.
Okay. Well, with that, please give this podcast a rate and a review, 5 stars, preferably. And these are just our opinions. So please engage in the conversation with us. You can find us online pretty much everywhere at Busy Girls Pod.
And let us know, like, if this one's such a hit and you want us to do book 2, slide into our DMs. We'll consider it. But with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.